You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Carol Che. Carol, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thanks so much for inviting me.
So, Carol, I want to talk about what you're working on now, specifically the zine. Can you tell us all a little bit about your role in that and a little bit about the zine?
Absolutely, yeah. We actually just launched it last night. We had a party here in Los Angeles at the Women's Center for Creative Work. And we launched it with a party that included emceeing by this wonderful comedian named Christina Wong, a performance by Jennifer Moon, who was in The Hammers Made in L.A. Biennial a couple years ago, and readings by the contributors. And it was just really, really wonderful. The zine is called Would-Be Saboteurs Take Heed, and we got the title from an old Emily Sassy Lime song from the 1990s. And Emily Sassy Lime was, to my knowledge, the only all-Asian American teenage Riot Girl band. And I actually know one of them personally. Her name is Wendy Yao. And today she is the proprietor of Ooga Booga Bookstore in Los Angeles, as well as just kind of a general like art world figure. The idea behind the zine was to recognize radical Asian histories and in so doing to also contribute to an ongoing radical Asian American history. Much of this was done in response to, you know, the escalating national dialogues around race recently, in which I feel like a multitude of voices is often absent. I think maybe a point of crystallization was the recent Oscars, where there was a big brouhaha over the whole Oscars so white hashtag. But then if you watch the actual broadcast, many people were disturbed by the fact that they talked a lot about African-American actors and their lack of representation, but there was little to no recognition of other ethnicities, such as Asians and Latinas, and there were even some offensive Asian jokes. So clearly there's so much work to be done in that arena, and our project is partially inspired by that. But in more concrete terms, let's see. We started this zine in response to a call for proposals that was put out by an initiative called Decolonize LA. Decolonize LA is a group of people. They've been holding like open meetings throughout Los Angeles for about a year now, kind of in response to a general sort of perceived whiteness of the art world. And so a group of, let's see, five of us actually came together and made a proposal, and we got a little bit of funding from Decolonize LA, and we decided to make a zine. So the zine is a collaborative effort between me and four of my friends, Audrey Chan, So-Young Shin, Emi Kuriyama, and Connie Ho. And I feel like it's very much a community effort. It involves a lot of our friends and people that we admire, both writers and artists. The zine contains a great mix of writing, of memoirs, of images, artwork, et cetera. It kind of captures a broad swath of our community. And we're just really happy with it.
Sounds wonderful. It sounds like the zine really is working. I mean, it makes me think the way you're talking and feeling about it too, is that a zine is kind of, can be such great energy, period, as a medium, as a force, because it's a message, it's collaborative, it's also this kind of, you know, like, let's make a magazine kind of vibe, mm-hmm. right? This sort of let's mm-hmm. change the world or something. There's very much, mm-hmm. You know, it feels like an activist role to just, you know, mm-hmm. the form of a zine, right? I mean, which mm-hmm. was really kind of my next question, is like, so how many do you print? How do you distribute?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. We got a small grant, and that took care of a lot of our costs. I mean, you know, you use the usual guerrilla methods to get your printing done. Some of us work at places where they have access to copy machines, et cetera. But we printed 250 copies. That's our first run. And Audrey did a limited edition Riso print poster for the cover. And I think we're going to continue to do that for future issues. But yeah, the zine format is so, I mean, it's fun at the same time that it's just really empowering. I mean, it's something that you can just throw together. And, you know, people are very willing to contribute to zines. You know, it's just like this really fun collaborative effort, and often it turns into something amazing. And yeah, it is just it's a great thing to do. It really is.
So let's talk a little bit more about the content of it. I mean, we're outlining it, but are there essays, poems, and like what how is it approaching that kind of radical history that you talked about? Is it in a very academic way? Is it in a kind of more punk way? You know, how is that approached?
I think it's a real mix. One of our inspirations is a guerrilla Asian American newspaper published in the 70s called Ghidra, which is archived at a few libraries locally. Ghidra was very, very, I mean, they were on a political mission, and you know, everything that they wrote was very hard hitting. Ours is very casual right now. And actually, I have to admit that the first issue was a bit of a rush job, because we got this funding and the turnaround time was really quick to do something with the funding, so we had to do it within like a month or two. And so, you know, reaching out to contributors, knowing that the time was so short, you know, we would just say, you know, please feel free to give us something that's pre-existing. You know, don't bust your butt working over the next week for this. And some people actually sent us like Facebook statuses, you know, that they had posted they thought were interesting, things like that. But other people like sent like full-blown essays that might have been published elsewhere. I myself wrote sort of a mini memoir based on some photographs that I had just happened to dig up recently from my queer activist days in the 90s. I found these photographs and I was like, oh my God, this is a window onto another world. They were photographs from the 1993 March on Washington, and it was just a snapshot of the 90s. They're just so colorful and so vivid. And so I basically just published a few of the photographs and wrote like extended captions, like whatever came to mind. So it's just like a bit of my personal history. Let's see. Steve Wong, who was recently the curator at the Chinese American Museum, wrote about the changing face of Chinatown in Los Angeles. Astria Superak, who is a fairly well-known video curator. Oh, sorry. Since this is Los Angeles, I'm sitting in my car and there's trash pickup happening.
That's right. Fine. It's part of the sound effects of the show. You know, I don't have too many.
Yeah.
So it's good to have a garbage truck. And
yeah, that was a very authentic LA moment. Anyway, yeah, and other people like submitted artwork, like drawings that captured stories of their families. What else was there?
It sounds exciting, and I'd love to see it. How would listeners get a copy of it? Is there a place to go, or can they write to someone, or how would one, if they're in LA, find a copy?
Let's see. Well, I'm going to try to consign it at, well, I shouldn't commit because I haven't even asked these people yet if they would consign with us. We do have a Tumblr, which is wouldbesaboteurstakeheed.tumblr.com. They can go there. And I think Tumblr has a function where you can contact the people, I think. I don't know if I should give out my email address over the airwaves.
Well, if there's something that will link to it, we'll put that in the you know, bio information about this in this interview that people could link to. But But yeah, otherwise they just have to kind of look for it. I mean, it can be also a little bit of a hunt, right? It isn't distributed at consistently at places. They're just going to have to look around.
Yeah, they can go to our Tumblr and try to communicate with us that way. Basically, if they just PayPal or Venmo us $5, we will, or $6 to cover postage, we will shoot a copyright out to them. We still have, we still have quite a few left, probably at least 150 left. So they're definitely available, and we were so inspired by this that we definitely want to continue the zine into the future. The response we got last night was amazing. I mean, I already told you there was kind of an element of casualness to it. So I wasn't sure how things were going to turn out, but I feel like people really brought substance both to their contributions and to their readings and performances. And people were saying things like, I didn't know that I needed this until I'd found this. And now I just want this on a regular basis. So that was really gratifying and kind of amazing.
And then by wanting this, you mean to say it's that kind of the whole experience of collaborating and exchanging mm-hmm. all this information? Is that what they're responding to as like the whole experience?
I think maybe they were talking about just kind of a space to recognize these issues, recognize and discuss these issues that are very particular to the Asian community, and maybe not necessarily a mainstream Asian community, because I feel like there are a lot of organizations that are centered around Asian American media presence, like especially in Los Angeles. You know, we have things like Visual Communications, we have the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival. I mean, there are all kinds of things like that, and I totally respect what they do. This is a little more punk, a little more. It's most of the people who are involved are art world people. I mean, we really share a certain sensibility with each other, very much so, maybe a little bit more than with mainstream Asian culture. So I think maybe that's what makes it special for the people who are involved. And it wasn't just Asians that appreciated it. I mean, there were a lot of non-Asians there too who really enjoyed it.
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like a vibrant community, period, that was just sort of almost created, like a zine creates a social fabric at the same time that it's disseminating all this information. There really is a, mm-hmm. A socio-political effect, right? People are getting together. It's mm-hmm. very real.
I have to say it's really a reflection on our community of friends and colleagues here in LA. It really is an amazing community. There's just so many like smart, talented, interesting people here who are just willing to do things and collaborate on projects at the drop of a dime and do wonderful things. And it's we're truly blessed to have that here in LA. The secret is out now. I mean, because people are flooding into Los Angeles. I don't know if you know about this, but they're basically flooding.
Tell me.
Oh, dear God. They're flooding from Brooklyn to Los Angeles now. I literally cannot leave the house without someone telling me that they just moved here from Brooklyn 2 months ago. It's a little discomforting. I mean, the trend is just fully on. It's like, you know, people are just leaving New York and coming to LA, which is a little disturbing. I mean, I feel like it's kind of disturbing our ecosystem a little bit, but I'm hoping that LA.
Why? What is the Brooklyn vibe in LA? What does that translate as?
It's just so many new people coming in, and combined with there's also like at the same time there's like this crazy real estate development craze going on where like there, you know, we've got developers coming in from China, from New York, from, you know, Europe, whatever. They're just looking to develop like, you know, the new Chelsea market, you know, and they're basically the Manhattanization of LA is kind of
right.
People
so,
are,
so all the artists have to move out. I mean, in New York, they're all moving to the boroughs, Brooklyn and further out. It's the same kind of thing there, you're saying?
Well, we're definitely starting down that road. I don't know how long it's going to take for us to turn into what San Francisco and New York have already become. But it's kind of like the same forces are definitely taking an interest here, which is definitely, you know, a lot of us we're just not happy about that. But I mean, we just have to hope that that our community is resilient enough to resist the negative effects, but we'll see.
Right. Well, and the negative effects are potentially because there's only so many kind of spaces or something. Is that really the?
I mean, obviously jacking up the rents is going to push people further from the center and maybe even push them
to
move to other places. But also,
that's what I mean. Real estate and influx is increasing. Like, just it's about rent. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, but aside from that concrete reality, there's also like a change in the general vibe. I mean, you know, it just becomes more professionalized and more career oriented, perhaps. I mean, maybe in the future people won't be as easily persuaded to just, you know, contribute to a DIY effort like this. I mean, do you know what I mean?
But that's interesting. I'm open to that. I mean, New York seems that kind of vibe coming from New York is a little more professionalized as opposed to the sort of, which is totally legitimate, the community-based DIY thing that is more about like the intrinsic value as opposed to careerism.
I mean, in fact,
it stands in stark contrast to that. The reason that person said they loved it wasn't because this was a careerist event, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not because they're gonna get one step closer to having a solo show at the Hammer or whatever it is, you know, but they responded to it because it really touched them in a personal way that has nothing to do with career or economics. I mean, I guess one of the things that really struck me last night was, you know, LA right now has this quality of just casual brilliance. You know, just casual amazingness. It's like you don't even put that much thought into things, and it just, you know, people just do wonderful things. So anyway, but enough of that waxing on.
that sounds great, and that's why, you know, I guess you're there. And what is the future for you? Like, what do you imagine coming up? The zine will continue. Do you have other projects, ideas, anything that you're imagining you want to develop in the future?
Yeah, I think you're catching me at a time of transition. I don't know.
Well, that's cool, but the zine seems exciting now. I mean, that transition is also this kind of community and experience. Sounds like is a.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a good fit.
Yeah, I think in general, I would say over the last few years, I personally have experienced a shift where I'm less and less interested in sort of the private elite aspects of the art world and more interested in like community-based and public art practices, perhaps. I think that's kind of the general direction that I'm going in. I was a very active freelance arts journalist for a while. I wrote a lot of articles for the LA Weekly, Art 21, East of Borneo, Art Limited, bunch of publications, Artillery. I don't do it as much anymore. A lot of the reason for that is also economic. Like, I was laid off from a museum in 2009, and I was basically living on unemployment for a couple of years, and that gave me the opportunity to do a lot of writing, because as many people, or maybe some people out there know, art writing is one of the poorest paid professions in the world. I mean, it's embarrassing how much I got paid for some of the pieces that I did. But I was able to sort of do that because I was living on unemployment at the time. And so that's how I established my writing career. But once that period was over, you know, I've been really busy basically hustling, making a living. I mostly do copywriting and copy editing right now. And most of it still has to do with the art world. Like I recently edited someone's PhD dissertation on social practice. I still write some catalog essays. I still do occasional journalism, some magazine features here and there. But definitely, I'm not as active as I used to be. And so, yeah, I'm kind of in the midst of a shift and not exactly sure what's coming next. I guess I'm just sort of feeling my way through it, and interestingly,
well,
I'm
glad you kind of articulated that, because you know the zine is also a nice place to catch you at, because you know to be in between things with something like a zine, which you know, has so many possibilities because of the collaboration, but also of just the energy that's passion driven, as opposed to, you know, which we were touching on a little bit before, market driven. It's about it's about something that's really meaningful and
yeah,
socially active, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, as opposed to doing something like opening a gallery along with everyone else in Los Angeles. You know, or getting into the game of art economics.
A curator at a university gallery or something like that. Some kind of job that wouldn't have near the excitement that you have now, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I guess that's what me and my friends are hoping for. I mean, none of us are really the type to, you know, work our way up at the Getty or something like that. And well, some of us are, but they do this on the side. But I think the core collaborators on this project are not really that type. So yeah, we are trying to find alternative ways to do what we want to do what we love, and hopefully, you know, not go bankrupt in the process.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you good luck with that. And the one question I want to ask before we go is, and I hope it doesn't put you on the spot, but lately I've been asking people what, and it could be off topic, but what book you're reading lately, or what magazine, could even be an article, but I've been asking people what book they're reading lately. And again, it can be off topic, because it could be anything from comics to fiction to historical studies.
Okay.
Anything in particular?
I got to give a shout out to one of my all-time favorite writer, Eve Babbitts. I don't know. Have you ever heard of Eve Babbitts?
Yes, but I don't know much about her.
Well, she's mostly famous for being the nude woman who played chess with Marcel Duchamp in Pasadena. You know, that iconic photo of him playing chess with a nude woman. That would be Eve Babbitts right there.
Right.
But Eve is also an amazing writer, an amazing chronicler of the early Los Angeles, like starting from the 1950s onwards. And to me, no one else has captured like sort of the subtle eccentricities of life in Los Angeles quite as well as Eve does. I mean, her writing is just, it's such a marvel, and it tells me so much about Los Angeles and about Los Angeles history and why it is the way it is. I mean, it's just so beautiful, and I just really savor it. Right now I'm working my way through Eve's Hollywood, which was recently brought back into print. For a long time, you could only, you know, get a used copy for like $300 on Amazon, but they have re-released it. And it's basically an account of her very early life. And what I love about it is that she addresses head on, like pretty much the thesis of the whole book is, hey, everyone says that we're a backwater and we're a wasteland, but you know what? I grew up like, you know, my father's best friend was oh God, who was, my father's best friend was Stravinsky, and like we used to hang out at his house when we were little, and these musicians would come over on a regular basis to play, and we would go to Ojai and have and hold our own festival because no one else cared, and we would have poetry readings in our kitchen because my mother loved poetry, and these are the poets that came, and she just has these wonderful lines that only people who have lived in Los Angeles for a while can understand, like lines like, Los Angeles has always been a lush jungle of creativity, and somehow people who come from the outside, they just can't see it, you know? And you know, for the longest time, this was true. Like, for the longest time, people were like, oh, God, L.A., it's so shallow. It's like, backstabbing, and it's just Hollywood stars and nothing, blah, 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 plastic surgery, et cetera. And people just had no clue about the other things that would go on here. Now, of course, the word is out, unfortunately. But for the longest time, that's exactly what it was like. And I love reading Eve's take on it from such an early stage. You know, it's just a beautiful thing.
Well, as I said, it sounds very romantic writing, really, of that time and era too.
It kind of is, yeah. It's romantic, and it's also, Eve is so interesting because she's capable of such subtle moments of beautiful, sublime poetry, and then other moments where she just sounds like an airheaded dit, you know? And, like, all of it is in there, and all of it is just mixed in there, and to me, that's also Los Angeles, you know? It's like Los Angeles is not perfect. It's not presentation ready, you know? It's got these fantastic moments. It's got these, like, totally awkward, ugly moments. I mean, it just kind of is, you know? And yeah, that's just one of the many things I love about her writing.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, and I'm so glad you spoke with me today. I wanna wish you well with the zine, and thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.